kind of a hard logical disconnect to make. Celebration is not allowed, but hurting people is encouraged.
Can I say that this is actually much more difficult than I imagined? Because as most people think, it's like it's either one or the other.
Fun. I mean, even Zach Greinke, last time I was talking to him, was like, at the end of it, was like, I'm trying to think of questions now that I have you here. I have to think of questions for you.
And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars number 12, where we're too depressed to think up a tagline anymore. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined by Chris Sherwin and Joshua Hausam, as is our custom around here. We are going to talk about a big brawl and a big losing streak. And once we get through all that stuff, the Blue Jays picked up a player off of waivers, have a newly injured player, have some guys on the rehab trail, and we have a couple of do-overs possibly in there. And then the pièce de résistance, we are going to play Swing and a Drive one more time for the with a special guest, I should say. The Blue Jay Hunter, Ian Hunter, has agreed to join us and come on and see if he can best one of our regular contestants. So all that said and done, gentlemen, where do I start with the brawl? Where is the beginning? Do I start all the way back last October? Do we need to hear that story again? Oh my goodness. You know what? We have an interview too.
You want to try that again?
No, I literally forgot about the interview. That's how overwhelmed I am today. Eno Saris is going to be in the middle of all that. And he's going to talk about the Blue Jays in the clubhouse when they were in San Francisco. Some cool stuff there. Where do I start with the brawl?
I'd like, just before you start with the brawl and everything, since you didn't want to edit that part out, I'm going to give you some edit now.
Okay.
This week.
Well, no, I don't want you to put too fine a point on it, Josh. I mean, what do you really want to say? Don't beat around the bush.
Oh, sorry. I'll try
don't
again.
Use all your fancy words.
This week. Okay, now, sorry, you wanted to talk about a brawl.
I did, apparently. There are so many bad takes. Okay, there are hot takes everywhere, but there are bad takes everywhere on this whole thing. Violence is cool again. Roofnet Ordour took exception after Bautista slid into him after being hit, slid in at second base. Everybody knows they were about to have some kind of altercation, and Ordour opened it up with a really, really good right cross from a technical standpoint. And then it all just went south.
Yeah.
And then everybody decided to have a really strong opinion about everything. So I'll start actually with Chris, because I know on Twitter, Chris, you made a tweet that got you a whole lot of reaction.
Yes, I did.
Which is unusual for you. You don't have like 6,000 followers, like, say, I don't know, does Gideon have 6,000 followers?
3,000 or something like that.
Right.
Well, I tweet maybe once or twice a week. And this particular tweet got me a little bit of attention because it was responding to Evan Grant, Texas beat writer.
He's known for his rational viewpoint on so many
things. Yes, absolutely. Incredibly rational. He made a comment about Bush like being like an instant hero among Texas fans for hitting Bautista. And I just made a real smug remark about like, oh, by hitting a guy with a baseball, congratulations. And he, instead of just responding to my tweet, he retweeted and responded.
He Wilnered you.
Yes, he Wilnered me in order to get the crazy fascist Texas fans all over me, and it worked. Which are he responded with, "It's baseball," and I said something smart back. I can't really remember, but it was kind of inappropriate. So anyways, I was attacked after that, and I'm going to read some of my favorites.
And your fan mail.
So you might need to get this bleep button back out again, Greg.
Yeah.
The button is just on standby. I'm putting it on my desk.
Yeah.
It's like the easy button, but it's not.
First one from a gentleman named Tanner just wrote, ha, 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 quit your bitchin'. Your being Y-E-R. Next comes Mr. Patrick France. I loved it. Rangers should hit Bautista every single time. Classy Massey. Classy Massey. No, Clay Massey, sorry. Clay Massey wrote, do you expect him to hit him with a football?
Oh.
But, Jacob Torres, I got it. He threw some solid shade at me. I got to give him props for this because earlier in the game, when Bautista hit the go-ahead double, put them up 5-2, I wrote something along the lines of glorious Rangers tears. So he responded to me with glorious Blue Jays fans tears. So I got to give him props to that because that was quality comeback. I'll give him that.
That's fair.
It's a good one. Congratulations, Jacob Torres. And then for what Mr.
Chris here is reading like the nicer of the ones. He got some... ones that we can't really read on the podcast.
No,
or are you
gonna
read them anyway? Okay.
I'm going in order, Josh. Don't you worry.
Okay, we don't want to make this podcast 6 hours, Chris.
He does want to make it 6 hours.
All right. So then a gentleman named Jeff came back with, you mad, eh? Toronto fan base were a bunch of classless asshats last postseason. Okay. A few of them were. Yes, I'll give him that. Up next, Ryan Welton. It'll be Argo season soon enough. Okay. And here's
you
where
probably
all
had to
down.
Look that up. You know that, right?
Yeah. this is where it all goes downhill. M4 Bama writes, USA, USA. yeah.
Of course.
And then,
hey, when Venezuelan punches a Dominican, you got to chant that.
Yeah, you just have to. Grant Boone writes, when it's your team, it's awesome. When it's the opponent, it's classless and dirty. I'm guiltier than I'd like. So, you know, maybe, yeah.
Yeah,
good
it's
for him,
not awesome when my team gets in a fight. Sorry.
okay, here comes Mr. Hunter. If you don't understand that,
not
then
Ian.
I... No, not Ian. If you don't understand that, then I question your baseball intellect. I would have drilled him game one, no doubt. Well then, Mr. Hunter, I question your baseball intellect for not understanding.
So basically, we don't need to keep reading all of these because the point is kind of clear. Texas fans very happy.
Oh, yeah, overjoyed. At him getting hit, and then at
him getting hit again in a different way.
There is, I don't want to like run roughshod over here. So to you, Josh, what is the central problem with the biggest issue? Because there's a lot of issues at work here.
Well, I mean, there's one central issue, really, which is that baseball is okay with this level of violence and this level of reaction to a guy hitting a home run in a big playoff spot. And we're going to get to this probably in a little bit more depth, or we could just do it right now. They didn't suspend Matt Busch. They acknowledged that he threw at Bautista and did not suspend him. And by doing that, they tacitly said, this is okay. So really, like all these Ranger reactions are being endorsed by the league, which is insane.
I think that's a huge problem. I think, yeah, right there. If you do something on the baseball field, which hurts no one, you are allowed to take out physical retribution upon them for either no penalty or minimal penalty.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
This is being celebrated, too. Did you see the... I mean, this is just about Matt Busch, but I mean, with Rougned Odor, did you see what the minor league team did, the Frisco Rough Riders?
That was going to be my do-over.
Well, you can do it right now, Chris.
What did they do, Chris?
The Rough Riders are celebrating the punch with, what is it, like a giveaway cup, a souvenir cup?
No. It's a drink they're selling, and you can buy the souvenir cup.
Oh, okay, right. So it's actually like a like Dr. Prepper fruit punch combination or something like that. And yeah, like the cup itself has just like, you know, a drawing punching of the punch. Yeah.
It's called Rugi's Red Punch.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And the announcement said, introducing Rugi's Red Punch. It won't knock you off your feet, but one sip and you'll, in brackets, bat flip.
So
the vice president.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. The vice president said, Odor is a feisty, energetic player, and we have to come up with a perfect drink to honor him. Yeah.
And we go back 2 months, and I remember very clearly that the problem with the young players in baseball was Bryce Harper, who seemed to enjoy winning.
Well, that's
and he
odd.
Was roundly made fun of and put down by a generation of manly men who think the game should be played the manly way, which is to say, by pummeling one another. This is going to be a vast improvement over jumping up and down when you hit a home run and fist pumping when you get a strikeout. How do these people wake up and come up with these opinions that this is the better world to live in? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's really kind of a hard logical disconnect to make. Celebrating is not allowed, but hurting people is
children.
Encouraged. It's nuts. You know, like, yeah. Rougned Odor is a hero for punching a guy in the face on a baseball field. Jose Bautista is an extreme villain for flipping his bat in celebration of a 3-run game-winning home run in a decisive playoff game.
Yeah.
There's just no logical way that you can get from one of those to the next and have it be, you know, okay.
Yeah, and if you look at it, well, some people will go, well, it was Bautista's hard slide, which is a lousy excuse because it's not about that. But even if it was, there was nothing egregious about the slide to lead to fisticuffs. You might get a guy who would say something about it, or ask why he went in so hard, or, you know, there might be discussion about why a guy has to get out of the way, but he didn't even have his spikes up. This was not a Chase Utley, or I don't know if anybody remember, was it Matt Holliday trying to kill somebody in the playoffs?
Rougned Odor?
Well, yeah, we went in that direction. It's like, he knows what it's like to be a middle infielder, and he knows what it's like to take out the ankle of a middle infielder. And yet he is the one, he took out someone on a slide, and then he instigated a fight in the minor leagues. So
yes, he did.
The problem is, in this situation, the small problem is Rougned Odor and his inability to not be a violent individual. The bigger problem is everybody cheering him on. That's a horrible precedent to set. Just ridiculous. And the other thing, sorry, one more thing, is people talk about Bautista starting at this and that. If he wanted to start something, he would have charged the mound long before the hard slide at second base.
I'm really curious how this would have played out if Justin Smoke didn't hit a ground ball to first or second or wherever the heck the ball went. I don't even remember anymore.
Yeah.
Because Bautista probably would have just yelled at some people coming off the field. I bet you Rougned Odor still would have punched him. No, I'm not even joking about that. He wanted a fight. I mean, he low-bridged him with a throw, too.
Yeah, that's hard to prove, but it certainly looks funny.
But I mean, even like the throwing angle is bad enough. I actually looked and compared it to some of his other double play turns. He does drop down, but not that far. But the real thing is, he did not get hit by Bautista. He didn't touch him. And the throw went 20 feet wide at first.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to make a throw that bad when you get taken out. When you don't, clearly you were trying to do something a little different.
So, sad and shameful. And, so I guess we should go to the part where we don't cheer on Kevin Pillar.
Well, I mean, this again gets back to baseball screwed this up with their suspensions. They screwed it up royal. Giving Odor 8 games, I mean, that's precedent. They should have changed the precedent and said, you know what, we're going to stop allowing this thing to be okay and given him 15 games or 20 games or something, but we all knew it was going to be 8. Where they screwed up was Bush, as we talked about, and somehow Pillar and Donaldson escaping suspension.
And Bannister.
Well, Bannister's the manager. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I have a serious problem with that. Based on what they gave Gibby and the reasoning behind Gibby's suspension.
But Gibby broke a very cardinal rule.
I know, but the reason that was given was, furthering the fight. Which Bannister did.
The reason that was given was coming back on the field and doing that. Like, it's got to be clear that it's the both of them combined. If he'd think, I wrote about this actually in my reaction piece. The reason they had to do both is because John Farrell had the same thing happen where he got suspended for coming back onto the field. But in his case, he came back onto the field and pulled David Ortiz away. When he appealed, they dropped the suspension completely.
Okay.
So I'm saying that second bit about egging them on is required for them to actually suspend him for it.
But they gave him 3 games because he's done it before.
Right. Now, so I agree with Chris that Bannister was an absolute clown here and probably deserved some punishment because he was very much egging the fans on and egging everybody else on.
He was being held back by 4 Rangers in the face of an umpire trying to shut him up. He was in the middle of the entire pack.
Right, I just don't think you can compare him to Gibbons, specifically. That's just all I was trying to say. Like, it's totally different scenarios.
Because there's no precedent for Bannister to be...
Well, set a precedent.
Right, yeah, well, no, that's saying he should be suspended, change. That's fine. But I'm just saying not because of Gibbons.
Right, well, I don't think Chris was saying that either. I think he was just... bogged down in the detail.
Yeah, but that's only, Pilar and Donaldson not getting suspended is crazy.
Yeah.
And then Chavez getting a 1 game or a 3 game?
3 games.
3 games and Bush getting none because no one had been warned when Bush hit people. That's the only difference.
That was also, I thought when they didn't suspend him, they just couldn't prove intent on it. And
nope.
No,
they said he intentionally threw.
Yeah.
So, the whole discipline thing was messed up. So many different ways. Has anything been done right in this whole thing before we close it out? I think one person acted in the correct manner. Can we all guess who that is?
Well, I think there are two.
All right.
Prince Fielder.
Yep.
And Adrian Beltre.
Beltre above Fielder, but yes, both of them.
And Fielder also...
Who gave the nicest bear hug in history to Jose Bautista. Like, dude, you don't want to go in there. There's people fighting. We're just going to wait over here, away from everybody else. And nobody's going to come after me, because they all know if they're going to touch me, they're going to die.
What were you going to say, Chris?
Well, Fielder, I'm assuming, for laughing off the hit by pitch and just running to first, but also, he was in there breaking up everything, throughout the entire fight. So, yes, props to him as well.
Yeah, the big man was going in there and throwing his weight around in a good way.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody thought we were going to come out and give props to 2 Rangers players in this whole thing, but I think that's the only person who escapes without a "what the heck were you thinking" moment. I mean, Bautista, to a lesser extent, I don't think he was really out of line, but if he really wanted to defuse it,
I think Bautista escalated the situation. I don't think he turned it into punches. I think that was Odor on his own completely, but I don't think he's absolved of blame.
All right, Chris, before we leave this, I'm going to give you a chance to read the most ridiculous, profane response you got to the tweet.
Okay, so my favorite one has to be from MFFL. He's got he's an NRA member. He's got an eagle in his picture on Twitter. It's a nightmare.
He's a walking stick.
Exactly.
And so, let's just be clear, Chris is using air quotes around favorite.
So he said about 6 different things to me, and I'm going to pick out my favorite one here. It was about the third one in. He said, "Can you imagine the embarrassment for Joey kid 6 inches shorter and 50 pounds lighter just knocked his wet back ass out?" Laughing emoji.
Well, you need to throw a little emoji in there just to lighten the mood.
And the amount of people who are saying that he got knocked out, or I can't tell you how many texts I got from angry people who don't like the Blue Jays. "Oh, Bautista just got his ass knocked out." No, he didn't.
He stumbled backwards.
He did not. He stumbled slightly because...
Are we just going to move on from that tweet because that was really bad?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going back there.
No, okay, let's just say that, like, that guy is, like, just, he's human garbage. I don't like calling people that. He is that.
Well, he's behaving like it. We'll give him that.
No,
we'll move on. Okay, fair enough. Let's move on to the exciting rest of the week, where the Blue Jays proceeded to get absolutely destroyed by the Tampa Bay Rays twice, and then just one more time the regular way for good measure. In addition to losing late both times at the end of the Texas series.
They won one game since we recorded the last podcast.
Wow. You know, we didn't want the close ones. We were tired of the close ones, so we got rid of that problem after they left Texas. we can lay a lot of this now. I mean, in Texas, obviously the bullpen was the usual problem, right? But now we suddenly have run into a bit of a wall with the starting rotation where both Marcus Stroman and Jay Happ back-to-back did nothing.
Yeah, they got shelled. You know, we talked about how it's like, well, this pitching is great. If just one of the hitting or the bullpen joins them, this team could take off. We didn't really address that if the starting pitching doesn't keep it up, this team looks really, really bad.
Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows.
I think we should just replace the whole podcast with that song.
It's on a loop. It's like, and then we finish off. I'll put Always Look on the Bright Side of Life at the very end in fine Monty Python tradition. I don't think there's really an explanation for back-to-back bad starts.
No, but also, I mean, it's been really four starts that were not very good in a row.
Fair.
I mean, Sanchez, he did not deserve to allow six runs. You know, he left two runners on base with two outs, and Jesse Chavez did what Jesse Chavez does and gave up a home run that scored them all. But he still didn't pitch great. You know, he still gave up four runs with two guys on base, and he walked a few guys, his command was off, and Dickey wasn't very good today.
Yep.
So, bad turn for the rotation at a very bad time. I guess technically this whole season it would have been a bad time because nothing else was working.
Indeed. Yeah. So that's five game winning streak with an off day, two off day.
Winning streak?
Winning?
Yeah. I want it to be a winning streak. I do. Sorry. That's the five game losing streak.
By the way, neither the Rangers or the Blue Jays have won since the brawl. So no, fighting does not galvanize
the team. Yeah, that's another fallacy I'd like. That could have been my cliche of the week if we had time for one, because it just doesn't make any sense at all.
And like blowouts for both teams.
Yeah. A little distracted. Little somewhere else. Do we want to go into any more details, gory details about this, or do we just want to move on to talking to Eno about some of maybe more of the finer things in life, the little details?
I just want to quickly address with this rotation. I don't feel, and I'm sure you guys agree, that this is all of a sudden the rotation has turned and they're going to go to crap.
No.
Just a few bad starts, and these guys are still as good as they've been for the first part of the season.
One would hope. Yeah. No, I don't think this is like, oh, finally all the warts are coming out. No.
But I mean, I don't think DJ Happ's going to have an ERA below two, but I think that these are still good pitchers, and what they were doing early in the season wasn't fluky.
Right. Absolutely. So on that positive note, which I believe is still possible at this particular juncture because it's only 1 week, we are going to go talk to Eno Saris, from Fangraphs, who was kind enough to join me to chit-chat about his up-close and personal chats with the Blue Jays this week. We'll be right back with him. And I am joined now by Eno Saris of Fangraphs and perhaps more importantly Beergraphs. I'm not sure which is you consider more important. How you doing, Eno?
Well, that's less important. That's my night job. I was looking for a night job after baseball writing became my day job.
Wow. That's most people aren't fortunate enough to get to that point, I don't think. I think a lot of us stick with the night job as the twiddling our thumbs over baseball.
I know, but then the stupidest thing is that I, you know, probably shouldn't have added another night job. I mean, I should probably see my children.
Well, there's that as an option. they'll be children forever, right?
Exactly.
So the Blue Jays just finished up a West Coast road trip where absolutely nothing of note happened, really. No significant game-related. So in light of that, you got to see the Blue Jays, which doesn't happen more than maybe once, maybe twice a year, but usually once a year because your neck of the woods is not somewhere where they get out to. You got to, I guess, speak again to a few Blue Jays. Josh Donaldson was someone who you talked to as an Oakland A more frequently. Is it a familiar relationship with him when you go back to talk to him again?
Yeah. He's not quite on the Greinke and Votto level where we just basically bring up whatever conversation we've been having and continue it. But it's pretty comfortable, and you know, he's ready for all of my, you know, questions about his, you know, advanced stats or whatever. But in this time, he, like other players who've begun to start doing this, he had basically something he wanted to talk about with me, and he wanted me to sort of look at. So in this case, I asked him, well, you know, you're pulling the ball, more fly balls, looks like it's great for your power. And he's like, yeah, sure, I like to do all those things. I like to pull fly balls. It's great. Yeah, I'm like, and okay. And he's like, but I need to tell you something. Pitchers are out there trying to deceive us, and those balk rules are no longer about the runner or about deceiving the runner. They're about deceiving me and Jose Bautista and all the guys with the long swing mechanics. And, you know, they're out there quick pitching us to death. And he had an example from that game the night before where Jake Peavy had basically quick pitched. They called him on it and, you know, basically griped at him on the field. And then he came to more of a set in the next pitch, and Edwin Encarnacion hit a home run. So, you know, it's funny in the light of what's recently happened that this was kind of a policing on the field. You know, in a way, Joey Bautista and Josh Donaldson chirping about him not coming set led to PV becoming, you know, coming more set in the next pitch, probably. Doesn't mean I'm comfortable with the whole self-policing in general. I don't really like that idea.
I think there's an idea about policing the attitudes in the game and policing the rules of the game. I think it was there's the written rules and the unwritten rules, right? And what we saw all on the weekend, which I'm sure will, because we fit these interviews in the middle, we'll have already talked about at great length.
I don't really want to get there. But, no, it is an interesting distinction, the written versus unwritten, because I think people think of a lot of the quick pitching thing as an unwritten rule, that people don't like quick pitching because – not because it's against the written rules, but because it's unfair or, you know, somehow trying to take advantage of the hitter. In fact, though, I went and looked in the rule book. It's against the written rules. And it's not just even about the runner. It says that even when the pitcher is not pitching out of the stretch and there are no runners on, if the pitcher has been found to try and to intentionally deceive the batter by not coming set, that pitch can be called a ball. It is against the written rules. Quick pitching is against the written rules. It's just one that, just like, you know, pine tar, the Michael Pineda pine tar stuff, it's something that happens so often that we've just decided to look the other way on a written rule.
And I think that's where baseball really starts to get into trouble with balance, because you have a bunch of written rules, you have a bunch of balk rules as well, and they don't get enforced stringently, and then slowly they don't get enforced at all. And then one side of the game, in this case, I think pitching has had a pretty easy run lately as the strike zone has dropped and expanded at the bottom, and now you can get fancy with hesitation moves and quick pitches and everything else. It's clear the hitters are suffering just by the sheer number of strikeouts and how hard it is to draw a walk anymore. And I think, you know, baseball would be better to address some of the stuff that's already there.
Yeah. And I think the balk thing in particular, too, is so complicated that nobody wants to hear about it. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things that you'd have to really go into a whole segment where they, and now we'll show you what a real delivery, here's a balk and blah, 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 blah. I think people would, their eyes would glaze over. So I think that might be part of the looking the other way. But it doesn't mean that it's not affecting the game. I think if it, you know, Donaldson seemed to think that most relievers did it. So, you know, I think that, you know, it is something that's in the game. Relievers and Johnny Cueto types, a lot of, you know, Bartolo Colon, a lot of guys have figured out, a lot of these veterans have figured out that, you know, John Lackey even does it, that there are ways that they need to screw with hitters. And the longer the swings get to get more power, the more you're going to see this, I guess.
And they say R.A. Dickey's starting to do it with his adjusted delivery. So it's not like the Blue Jays are innocent on this front.
Right, yeah.
So one of the other folks, you talked to one of the Canadians on the team, Russell Martin. You said you might have talked framing with him a little bit.
Yeah, I came to him with an idea. I was looking around at pass ball rates and wild pitch rates, and they have been going up. They're peaking. So I think that I was like, well, I'll ask Russell Martin about this. And he was like, I think you just went and found something, and you went digging and you found something. I don't think there's anything really there. So, I was like, oh, you got me. Well, that is my job, pretty much. But I then asked him if he thought that framing and was a skill that ran counter to blocking. That basically, by, you know, obsessing about stealing that strike, that that you might let that ball go by, right?
Right.
And he didn't really agree with that. I've had other guys like Travis d'Arnaud has had a problem with blocking, and he kind of thought maybe it is, because I think even after I talked to him, I watched him in a game with a pass ball where I think he really stuck with the ball too long. I think he really thought he was going to maybe, you know, get a strike out of the pitch that ended up behind him. So he doesn't have necessarily a problem with blocking balls. And they might just be two separate skills that I think baseball has decided they value framing higher, and they're not going to get a really good blocker because it just isn't worth as much. Wow. So I think that's probably just the answer to it, and it's not as sexy, and it might not lead to an article, but it did lead to Russell Martin kind of telling me his whole thing about, you know, how he frames, and it was kind of intuitive and very almost kind of sexy.
Well, I think what you do, you know, and why I appreciate reading your stuff is because you're doing something not a lot of people try and do. And if people haven't read a lot of what you do, again, I encourage them, that you're trying to take all of these numbers that we have, which we have like millions of numbers associated with the game. And then we have players who are doing things that have nothing to do with, you know, number of rotations on a pitch or anything else. They're doing it intuitively and they're getting a certain result. And you're trying to see if numbers we have in a lot of cases mean something with the results that are actually coming out. I don't think there are enough people doing that in baseball. So I think that's maybe also why some players come to you and want to talk about what they want to talk about, because they know that you're going to give them a perspective on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's there've been more and more guys who kind of sought me out, like Jed Lowry came running across the clubhouse today. You know, that would be, no, he came running around the clubhouse the other day and he said, I hit this ball at this launch angle with this exit velocity and it went this far. And then I hit the same ball in Houston and it didn't go as far, and it can't just all be temperature. And so he sent me out on this whole basic research project that I'm now working for Jed Lowry. I'm going to, you know, try and kind of do like a heat map of outfield walls and basically show maybe where there's some wind effects. Anyway, that should be a real fun piece. Haven't seen anybody do anything like that. And it's really, now that's really fun. I mean, even Zach Greinke, last time I was talking to him, was like, at the end of it, was like, I'm trying to think of questions now that I have you here. I have to think of questions for you. So, you know, I thought it is more interesting now that they see me coming and have certain questions for me and have certain answers ready for me, basically, in a way that we have, we sort of launch into a conversation. There's less, have you heard of Fangraphs, you know, that sort of deal.
I think people have realized you're not trying to reduce them to a series of numbers, which I think is what the fear has always been from baseball players, right? That's when the nerds came, so to speak, was I'm just a stat sheet. Yeah.
I've been on a panel too where I said, you know, what I really want to do is show how these numbers can help the player. You know, there's another perspective. Everybody thinks about numbers as sort of the GM perspective, but there's another perspective, which is the coach, the pitching coach, the hitting coach. And those players, those coaches are there to help the player. And they're oftentimes, not all of them, but oftentimes they're on top of the numbers just as much as anybody else. And they're reading the sort of front office type numbers. And then they're boiling it down in a way that the player can use to be better. So, you know, I think that that's the sort of conversation I'm jumping into. I'm jumping into the hitting coach, pitching coach conversation a little bit more than the overall sort of front office information.
Indeed. I think we got slightly turned to the left there, so I will redirect back to actual Blue Jays. You mentioned also the other well-known Canadian, the oft-traveled, and you and I were talking about oft-injured Michael Saunders. Had a few minutes for you. I like Michael Saunders when he's healthy. He seems to be a good all-round player and an excellent, a fine hitter. But he certainly can't stay on the field, and he's really trying to break that curse this year.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about the different things that he's dealt with, and I kind of just wanted him to kind of just go through his different injuries, as much as that was a sad conversation to have. and he did it for me. And, you know, I did this once with Lowry even, and I expected Saunders to kind of be like, oh, they're all freak accidents. It's all freak. It's freak. It's freak. He didn't really go that direction. He was kind of just sort of explained each one, and not in a way that didn't say that, like, this is never coming back, but just like, then that's what happened there. So he had a lot of shoulder injuries, right? Mm-hmm. Here's something I didn't know about Michael Saunders. He was a pitcher. He had a toasted shoulder from pitching. It was like a labrum. Everything was bad. So, you know, when I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, that's explained. Because that explains some of the shoulder injury, and it's not something that everybody knows. You know, and he was a pitcher until he started hitting better in college, and then he was drafted as a hitter. But he was a pitcher, you know, as a kid and all the way up, and almost was going to be drafted as a pitcher. When I asked him if he could, you know, be the emergency pitcher, he said, no. I guess his shoulder is toast in that way. So that was one thing. Then we talked about the knee, and he said, well, what really happened with the knee was, yes, the sprinkler, ridiculous bad. But what happened that was worse and not unforeseen was that once I kind of tore the meniscus, I had a bone injury there, a bone-on-bone sort of bone bruise. And that didn't manifest itself until I got healthy enough from the surgery to get on top of the knee again. And then it was like, wow, that's painful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this was a common thing that happens with meniscus problems, is that once meniscus is gone, the bone hits the bone and there's a bone bruise there. And so there's a bone situation. And he said he's actually lucky enough that he didn't lose the whole meniscus and that, you know, the bone bruise is now gone. And he says that he's talked to other guys that have had that situation and they've had long careers afterwards. So it's not a full, you know, whatever they call that when they remove the entire meniscus. So it's not a Chase Utley situation, where even Chase Utley's done pretty good with the bone on bone. But, you know, it's a better knee situation than I thought going in. And then the last one that's taken a lot of time here and there has been the oblique. And I understand he understands that that's sort of nagging and takes him away off the field and stuff. And it does happen. But he said, you know, the only thing he can do about it is train for it. And he says that baseball has become an oblique sport. And I think he's right, because I was down in Driveline Baseball, is kind of a pitching mechanics school in Seattle, run by Kyle Boddy. And their biggest thing was they said that trunk velocity, trunk rotation velocity, is one of the biggest predictors of overall velocity. And that's so pitchers really have to get strong in the trunk. And then I was thinking about David Wright and all the sort of oblique injuries he's had and all the oblique injuries we've seen hitters had, and thinking about how the hitter is trying to get his bat speed to match the pitching speed. And how do you do that except for trunk rotation? So, you know, for Saunders, I think it's the same sort of deal where he's been injured in one place that everybody's been injured, the oblique. He has a crazy knee accident, and then he has a shoulder thing that is related to pitching. So it's you know what I mean? It's not saying these things can't happen again. It's not saying they're all freak accidents, but he's saying, well, this is what happened to each one of them. And it's once you look at it that way, you're like, okay, all right, I understand.
Well, yeah, you got to go forward with what you've got, right? You can't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he doesn't seem too down about it. And he said he checked with everybody about the knee thing. He felt better once he heard some people say that they did okay with a similar situation. So, you know.
So lastly here, I wanted to touch on Marcus Stroman, because we appeared to go from interesting novelty pitch, which had a lot of good effect and was talked about, and somewhere we've transitioned to state secret, because I heard he didn't really want to show off the grip anymore.
Yeah. He said he gave that to your local TV channel, and then he said he doesn't really want to do that anymore. So I don't...
Copyright.
Something must have happened there where he didn't feel that great about it. But you know, he then talked to me about how he found that grip and some of the stuff. Brandon Kennedy wrote a really good story about it, and I'm trying to take it in a new direction a little bit and talk about, you know, what's next for Marcus Stroman. And I think that people don't realize that he hasn't been pitching as a pitcher first for a long time. Even when he was at Duke, the first couple of years, it was kind of on again, off again, kind of did two things. He said he became primarily a pitcher junior year at Duke, which is 2012. So, even if you count the 2 years before, you're only talking about 6 years of pitching, really. And so he says he's learned. He used to be a totally different pitcher. He used to be a four-seam breaking ball guy with lots of pitches, 110 pitches by the fifth inning, and lots of punch outs and lots of fouls and lots of home runs. And he said finding that sinker really made him a totally different pitcher. And I think that when we look at what's going from here, it's sort of bringing some of that other stuff back. So now he's bringing back the four-seam. He's throwing the cutter more now, and he trusts it more. He's getting more depth on the breaking balls now that he's a year healthy from the knee, and he's spent a whole offseason getting healthier. His release point's a little bit higher, so he's getting more depth on those breaking balls. So that's what I think's been happening the last three games, where he's really shown more depth, more swinging strikes on the curveballs and the sliders, and mixing in those cutters against lefties, and really showing us what can maybe come for Stroman. So I think he can really push that to almost 7-8 strikeouts per nine, and combine that with that 60% ground ball rate, and just be just a really great, really high floor pitcher that may not have the crazy strikeout rates of some of the other aces out there, but is more likely to put up like Dallas Keuchel year last year. I think he's more likely to be able to kind of find a way to sustain that for many years, because he has more velocity than Keuchel. He has that same ground ball floor, and now he can add in the spinning pitches. And I don't know if he'll ever find a changeup. He was kind of like, I love the pitch, but I hate the pitch. I don't love my changeup right now. If he does find that changeup, then he could be an ace's ace, somebody we talk about for years and years. But even without that, I think he's going to be a very good pitcher, and I think we're going to see even a little bit more this year.
It seems to me like some pitchers tinker with a changeup literally their entire career and never get happy with it. Though they claim they're almost happy with it. They just can't break it out. All right, so we mentioned beer graphs off the top, and I would like to give you an opportunity. You have some beer graphs news.
Oh, that's right. I'm coming out with a book called The Craft Beer Lover's Guide to Baseball, and it's basically just a guide to the best beer in and around stadiums for all the major league teams. And so got recommendations from different writers in each of the cities. Beer writers, baseball writers, have a couple beer graphs writers helping me edit it and put this together. Should have some leaderboards and some maps that help you kind of design. Like if you were like, hey, I'm going to go to Baltimore, in the chapter, it's like, well, here's a pub crawl you can do where you go from the Inner Harbor. You can have some crab in the Inner Harbor and then just walk this pub crawl over to the baseball stadium, and you can just, have a good time all the way. And so it's, going to cost $2.99 or something, maybe half a beer in order to make sure that you've got an idea of what your plan is,
Sounds like good fun. I am sure more than one or two of our listeners enjoy both beer and a baseball game simultaneously, so to speak.
I think so. I think they'll enjoy it.
We can find you on the Twitter at Enosaris, Enosaris, correct?
That's right, yeah.
And of course, almost every day at Fangraphs, it seems.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind being every day in that clubhouse. It was a fun clubhouse. There's definitely a lot of, you know, energy types. And it's not the kind of structured, fractured clubhouse that you sometimes get. It was definitely, you know, having a guy like Joey Batts in there is really, really good because he is a link between two and three different parts of the clubhouse. And he's a everyday, you know, bat first superstar that everybody will listen to. And he can speak two languages. It's really important to have somebody like that in your clubhouse. And, you know, it kind of goes beyond what he does on the field. And, you know, I think that they're going to rally around this sort of stuff. I mean, why are you really going to rally around the Brian McCann School of Baseball? You know, I don't think so. I think that, you know, Joey Votto was talking about how Bryce Harper said, we want to make baseball fun again. And so if you watch Joey Votto, he's having more fun. Yes, it's trolling, you know, people and the fans in Philadelphia and not throwing them balls and, you know, doing little celebrations and stuff. But it's fun, you know. And I think that more young fans in particular are going to come down on the side of, you know, there was nothing wrong with Joey Batts' bat flip. So that's the core of this entire argument. You can almost let everything else fall away and say there is nothing wrong with a little flair in baseball. So
wow,
that's my piece. And I really enjoy that clubhouse. I think, you know, Donaldson's funny. Aaron Sanchez, surprisingly outspoken. I don't know how he is in the media, but he was making some jokes and yelling around. And Russ Martin, just calm. He's like your grandpa. I mean, he's a little bit older. I'm not making a joke. You know, he's more like your calmer, calming influence. You know, and then you got Joey Batts, who's sort of in between. So it's just a real nice clubhouse. And let's see if they can get the pitching and the, you know, everything together this year.
Well, it's good to know that they're good. It seems like they're remaining calm on the inside, because on the outside, they've been a little bit up and down to start the season. But we do thank you for your insight and your perspective, Mr. Sarris, and I hope we get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for dropping by. Bye-bye. So, I'd like to thank Eno for coming on. Always good to hear his one-on-ones with the players and how they've turned out.
Yeah. You know, it's like nice to hear people talking honestly. Like, that the players are honest, like Saunders about his leg and the you know, the stuff about the clubhouse. You don't usually get that stuff, so it's, you know, a little more fun.
Pretty cool. Okay, so we're going to do some listener questions first, and then we'll do the rehab update. That makes sense?
Well, our rehab update might come out with some questions.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. So I guess the first question is one of our rehab candidates. What's the corresponding roster move when Travis gets back?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is the big news in the positive department for Blue Jays fans. Devin Travis is rehabbing, and, you know, he's rehabbing well. He was 5-for-14 in Dunedin, and he just got called up to Buffalo. So, I mean, he looks like he's healthy and ready, so no month long. So I think it should be Goins goes down now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting pretty unplayable.
Yeah. Yeah, like you got to be able to do something other than catch and throw the ball, and it's apparent that no, that's not happening right now. I mean, if he goes down to AAA and the adjustments, yada, 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 whatever, you can always call him back up and DFA Barney if you think he's got something real special. But at this point, he's a black hole.
Yeah, I mean, okay. He's been the worst hitter on this team, and this team has Russell Martin.
Ooh. Oh, very nice, that is. the Blue Jays, other news, they picked up Jimmy Paredes on waivers from the Orioles. He has some pop in his bat, and then that led to the question from A Year of Beer. Is Jimmy Paredes the second coming of Juan Francisco? Chris, your thought.
Can we hope for the first month of Francisco?
Yeah.
Because that would be perfect. The rest, not so much.
I don't think they're actually good comps. Francisco has way more power than Paredes does.
Mm.
The home run today, notwithstanding, in his 10 home runs in 100 games last year. You know, that's probably more what he is. But he's a guy, he makes contact, and he can play a bunch of positions. None of them very well, but he can play them. You know, he's a better hitter than Juan Francisco. It's like, if you throw him a curveball, he's out.
There.
So my answer is no, he's not the second coming Juan Francisco. I think that you can actually hope for some sustained performance from Paredes.
Sounds like a plan. Here's one. I guess I don't really have to hand this to anybody. No questions, just a prayer request for the Jays. That's from at Senzel3000.
We're with you, Senzel.
Dear baseball gods, stop, please. Just please, stop.
Maybe they're answering our prayers by having some people getting healthy. Since we just lost Brett Cecil for a month, which, not very good.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Quickly, Chris, what did he tear?
A lat.
And where would I find that?
In your back region, Greg.
And how would I hurt it while pitching?
Do you want me to count the ways? Because there's plenty.
Yes, it's very close to the shoulder.
So you're saying he's a pitcher? And he's broken.
Yeah, so they think he's going to be out a month. But Aaron Loop is on the rehab trail. Which, I mean, Aaron Loop was counted on for a lot this year, and then Franklin Morales was counted on for a lot this year, and then Pat Venditti, and then on and on and on. But, you know,
I think it's a lot less has been made out of the lack of a consistent lefty in the bullpen than should have been at this point. Part of the reason I believe the bullpen has been this bad is because Gibbons has never had a left-hander he trusted.
Yeah. I mean, Loop's first appearance was terrible. He threw one inning, he walked four batters, he gave up two hits. He did strike someone out.
Oh, well.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a rehab outing. He didn't even have a spring training, really, or at all. So, you know, him coming back could be really huge. I mean, you know, last year he wasn't very good, but he was very, very good for the 3 years prior. So he could be a nice bit of reinforcement.
And we got your other man.
My beau.
Your beau.
Yes. Schultz is also on a rehab assignment. He's been sent to Buffalo. So, you know, he's better than what they've gotten from some of their other pitchers.
Oh, that's a bone-chilling thought this week. Okay. Let's see. I've been asking them all this week. I'll just keep asking them. From Travis Stewart at Travis G. Stewart. My question is why? Oh, why did you break the glass on Buck and Pat's incessant shift talk? It's all they talk about.
Chris.
I'm sorry. I take full blame for this. I would talk about it again this week because they went on a rant about it this game tonight.
I'm sorry, there isn't time. really, they've been talking about it for a long time. We just got fed up enough with it that we thought you should all share in our pain. Isn't that really the truth, Chris?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not us. It's them.
It's them.
Always them. And our final question is from our regular contributor to the question segment at @B_B_BSR, Brian. Who is the most plausible trade candidate if we're going to have a fire sale, and why is it Kevin Pillar? Josh.
Wait, you have to say, you have he gave at, some, there you go.
Gideon Turk.
Yes. Excellent shade thrown towards Gideon. Love it.
I don't really want to address this for real. So I'm just going to say why it's Kevin Pillar.
Yep.
Because he's Gideon's favorite player. That's why.
I would say because he's the one guy who they have a young rookie slotted in AAA who could theoretically be better than him in most aspects. So you could say it's Kevin Pillar. Other than why would you trade away a controllable young player? But what's control when you have Dalton Pompey in the wings, right? Maybe not. All right. We are going to go now, I think. That covers all our questions. Do we cover all of our rehabbers? Yes, I see them on the list. We're going to go get a special guest and come right back in just a second and play Swing and a Drive, like I promised. And we are about to once again play everyone's favorite game around here, Swing and a Drive. And in order to do so, we brought on a special guest tonight, Ian Hunter. You will know him as the Blue Jay Hunter. Welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, Ian. How are you doing?
After tonight's game, not great, but I'm glad we have some levity in store here. This will kind of help soften the blow a little bit.
Yeah. We're going to remember that whether the Blue Jays are doing well or not, and not is definitely applicable, Buck Martinez is still going to say weird things about, well, fly balls mostly. So you're familiar, for those who are not familiar with the game, I just want to clarify, it requires no skill. I think that's most important to remember, is there's none involved.
I refuse to agree as the every time champ.
Oh yeah, special note, you're not playing. Because you are the every time champ. We've sent you off to pasture, whatever it is you do with a racehorse that does very well. And okay, I don't want to picture that at all. we have clips of Buck Martinez split into two parts. One before he announces what the play is, one afterwards. I only give you the player. Some of these will be fly balls, some of these will be home runs, and some of these will be extra base hits. We're just going to see if by that first half of the call, you can make an educated guess, as to what the second half of the call is going to be. Are you ready to play Mr. Hunter?
I guess.
We'll ask Mr. Sherwin, are you ready to play?
Always. Let's go.
All right, Chris. I'm be ready to go first, because you've played before. I think you have an advantage.
Nice start.
Already. I know. I
rarely see any righties coming out of that pen anymore.
Goins hits it hard to center field. Jackie Bradley Jr.
Oh.
Oh.
There we are. Jackie Bradley Jew. Your. Chris, home run, fly ball, extra base hit.
Fly ball.
And Ian?
I'm going to say fly ball mostly because it's Ryan Goins and it's also to center field.
Fair. Let's see what happens.
Runs it down. Boy, can he go get him. Up against the wall in center.
Well, he actually got it up against the wall. So that's a point each, gentlemen. Good start. Good firm start.
I also love how our opening clip was Buck praising someone on the other team.
It would probably be our closing clip, too, at this rate. We have, for your pleasure, and Ian, you'll have to answer this one first, Edwin Encarnacion.
Swing and a drive deep to center field. Austin Jackson looking.
Ooh, I'm going to go home run just solely off the sound of the ball that came off the bat. Nothing to do with Buck.
Disregard Buck entirely.
Just the way that ball sounded off the bat, I'm saying that's a home run.
I have to say home run too, for the exact same thing. The crack was just, it was too much.
Sorry, gentlemen. Now, I do have bad news for you. If you both keep answering the same, the good news is neither of you will lose.
I'll still remain the undefeated champion. No one else will have won.
We will also keep playing until the year 2019.
So I have six queued up. So just in case we have to have a tiebreaker where I force you to a different result. But we will try. Hey, Edwin Encarnacion again. So we've had an extra base hit. What will we have this time?
With two runs in the second. They added two more in the fourth. And there's a deep drive to left.
I like when Buck is interrupted by the play occurring. I love those clips. Like, oh, geez, I was doing a promo and they're playing again. Deep drive to left. Chris.
Play guy.
I'm going with home run again.
I'm going to say fly ball.
All right, deep drive to left.
Encarnacion jumps on this pitch, and it is gone.
Chris, you
yes!
The lead.
Now, Ian, did you go with the fly ball just to be different? It sounded like you did.
No, there was barely any crowd reaction, and it didn't come until after the fact.
Which it was weird. That was in Baltimore. So the crowd was happy. But only after the home run was actually
hit. there was a good crowd reaction after that home run, was there not?
There was. Yeah. I would have sworn that was at home.
No,
on a road game.
You know, I think that was September 30th in Baltimore. That was the clinching series, according to
the coach. Fair enough. Okay.
So there were a lot of people there hoping. Next, Encarnacion. All these balls are to left field, aren't
they? They're all Encarnacion.
Yeah, but just Encarnacion over and over. I decided that was going to be my theme, pretty much. That means that, let's see. I've lost track. Who went first last time? I don't want to be unfair.
I went first last time. So Chris, you're up.
So I'm just wrong.
Chris?
Yes?
What do you call that?
I call that a... extra base hit.
Extra base hit. Ian?
I'm like trying to envision the trajectory of that ball, and I don't think it quite has enough on it, so I'm going to say extra base hit.
Burns on the run. He's got room right in front of the scoreboard. Pereira tags it.
Oh, you have been bucked.
Still in the lead.
See, I think Ian's problem right now is he's trying way too hard to assume things here.
Yeah. Am I overthinking it?
I have emphasized that this is a game of no skill. None. I'm going to try and make you guys feel good because my next clip is Devin Travis. You remember him?
I've heard of him, yes.
Former Toronto Blue, current Toronto Blue Jay.
He's on his way back, gentlemen. I think he deserves a place in this just for being in AAA.
As a bit of a side note, is anyone else like really surprised he's coming back? Because I remember Jeff Blair saying he would be surprised if he wasn't going to come back at all this year.
I mean, I tend not to put too much stock on Jeff Blair's predictions about who and what will happen with the Blue Jays. But I'm also surprised that it's this fast because even them, they're saying, yeah, we hope maybe baseball activities in late May. And, you know, he's already been promoted to Dunedin and it's May 18th.
Promoted to Buffalo.
Buffalo's, yes.
Yeah.
This is good. This is great news.
It is.
Yeah.
There's actually good news on this podcast.
Yeah.
All right. And now we have a little flashback.
Second base to go get the ball and still make the play. There's a ball driven to center field. Adam Jones on the right.
Ooh. I believe, Ian, it's your turn.
I'm going to try not to overthink it, and I'm just going to say fly ball.
All right. Chris.
I'm going with another extra base hit.
Another extra base hit.
He's not going to get it. He plays it on a hop. Smoke is going to stop at third. Devin Travis.
And there you go. That is a 3-1 lead for you, Chris, and we have but one clip left.
Make it worth three.
Absolutely. It's like every game show on television, and the final bonus lightning round is worth 10 times as much as the entire rest of the game.
Wait a second, gentlemen. Can we go to the judges? Did that not sound like a single?
Oh, play it back.
I have it as a double.
He played it off on a hop.
Off the wall.
Ah, fine. Fair enough. Listen, I'm trying
get away with a technicality. That's
I
like great. This.
I'm trying everything I can possibly do here, and it's not helping.
Let me have this, Ian. I always lose.
Fine.
So we have a 3-point question. Jose Bautista.
High and deep drive to left.
That's all you get.
Out.
And Ian.
Let's go home run.
Attaboy.
I wish Ian and I could save
Michael
him.
Brantley back. It's going to hang up. He's on the edge of the warning track. Bautista just missed the home run.
I would have gotten home run on that one, too.
Just on the edge of the warning track. This is that better
finally!
Be Chris applauding for himself.
That was absolutely me applauding for myself.
Someone else is going to clap for Chris.
Never won this game before.
Excellent. I
mean, come on.
So now you're going to be the guest of honor every time, Ian.
Can I say that this is actually much more difficult than I imagined? Because as most people think, it's like it's either one or the other with Buck. But this was much more difficult than I anticipated.
There just is no consistency.
No, there absolutely isn't. It doesn't matter whether they're at home or on the road. There's just it's all over the place.
Absolutely. And that's why we love Buck Martinez, because we've said it a couple of times. The amount of material he feeds into this podcast, we should probably send him a little, maybe a check or a gift certificate for the LCBO or something.
I think next time we should do swing and a drive, but with Dan Schulman, and we'll all just get everything right because it will all make sense.
Well, thanks for joining us, Ian.
And, well, thank you very much for having me. It was lots of fun.
And hopefully this somehow breaks a jinx magically and the Blue Jays' fortunes turn because of this little exercise here.
Yes, let's hope so.
All right, have a good night.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming by.
So, that was a fun little game. And that means we are in the home stretch here. And in the home stretch, I generally ask for a final thought, which I will start with you, Chris. I will ask you for a final thought first because your final thoughts are of the most high quality.
Hey. I'm feeling that was just a tad bit of sarcasm in there, Gregory.
But I still managed to make Josh feel bad.
Still got a hey out of him.
So you got both of us.
Non-Jays related, I'm stealing Josh's thunder from last week. Just want to give the White Sox a shout-out because they turned their second triple play of the season tonight as we were recording this podcast.
What?
Yep.
That's insane. Cool, too. All right.
Yeah.
And Josh?
Okay, so, well, two things. One, we got a question from Quinn that was asking us about how many players have hit game-tying and home runs in the ninth and then go on runs in the tenth. We don't know. That's a question for the Elias Sports Bureau.
Who are but not Google, terribly cooperative.
Yeah, well, they're busy. But just for Quinn, Google Art Shamsky. You'll find a fun one. That's what I'll say there. And my actual final thought, Rob Benford, our good buddy from the commissioner's office, was talking about pace of play again, our favorite topic. And he's, you know, he's going on. He's like, oh, but it's not replay. You know, that's not the issue. You know, yes, it is. I'm sorry. That is the reason that the pace of the games is terrible. The new rule has managers looking into the dugout on every double play ball to see, was there an illegal slide? So even though the average replay is less than one per game, that's not the average delay for replay.
Indeed.
And then he started talking about like maybe putting in pitch clocks. And as we know from Dr. Mike Sun's comments, that would be very bad for pitcher health.
Yep. So just do that over. Just freaking the rule about replay should be real simple. If you gesture to the umpire, that's a replay. End of story.
Okay.
No video room.
Yeah. Nice and simple.
All right. I am going to tell people things that I normally tell people. I'm going to tell them that your Twitter handle is at Joshua Housem and Chris's. You still there, Chris?
I'm still here.
You didn't doze off during that whole little segment? All right. Is at CW Sherwin and mine is at Coolhead2010. And that means that this.
Our guests?
Well, I'm getting there. You never listen to these whole things? Means that this has been.
I thought you were going to throw the Twitter handles out for our guests.
Oh, for our guests. I'm sorry. Eno at Eno Saris. Ian Hunter at Blue Jay Hunter. Which means that you have been Joshua Housem and Chris Sherwin. I have been Greg Wisniewski. Our guests were Ian Hunter of the Blue Jay Hunter and Eno Saris of Fangraphs. And this was Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 12. And we will see you on a hopefully much happier week next week. Sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. That's how this refrain goes. Come on, join.